talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I hear you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning, and welcome to We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Kate Marquis.
Kate Marquis is here. We cannot squeeze four geeks into this tiny little studio, so we have given Jim Batts the day off, with pay, I might add.
Oh, and he's probably sleeping in.
Probably, and he has been replaced with Kate Marquis today. This is our annual Sliff show. We do this every year at We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. We dedicate almost an entire show to the St. Louis International Film Festival. Actually, this is our first annual Sliff We Are Movie Geeks podcast because we haven't been around less than a year. But wearemoviegeeks.com, the website, has a long history of extensive coverage of the St. Louis International Film Festival. Mm-hmm. We cover it more than any other site or radio station or any other venue as far as that goes. We review the movies playing at the festival. We are judges for some of the films at the festival. We interview the visiting filmmakers at the festival. And Michelle and Kate are going to talk about some Women in Film Awards that are coming up at the festival. I have a bunch of interviews with visiting filmmakers that I will be posting this week and next week, including one tonight that I will post. It's an interview with Alex Winter, who will be receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award this Thursday night at the festival. So welcome, Kate. We're glad that you're have joined us this morning.
Thank you.
And you are a contributing movie reviewer for WeAreMovieGeeks.com, but you also write for other venues as well. Who else do you write for?
The St. Louis Jewish Light, mm-hmm. and I have written in the past for Playback, and I write for my own website, in which I do film and theater reviews, which is St. Louis Marquis, M-A-R-Q-U-E-E, unlike my name, which is spelled the other way.
I see. How long have you been reviewing movies, Kate?
I've done this for several years, but I've been interested in film since I was a kid. My dad was a local artist, and he was very big on film and film history, so I got introduced to classic films early on, and I came at this first as a film historian, so I looked into film history, and then I started doing reviews when someone at the college newspaper asked me to do reviews.
What was the first movie you reviewed, do you recall?
No idea. Sorry.
That's okay. So you're a lifelong movie buff then?
Oh, yeah. And very big on classic films and foreign language films.
Okay. What are some of your favorite movies of all time?
Okay. Well, some of my favorite directors are Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, Akira Kurosawa, Stanley Kubrick, Alfred Hitchcock, John Huston, Quentin Tarantino, Ethan Coen, big on the Coens, Martin Scorsese, Terrence Malick, Wes Anderson. You know, so all across the board. Some of my favorite films are The General, Sherlock Jr., The Kid, City Lights, M, The Maltese Falcon, Casablanca, Duck Soup, like the Marx Brothers, It's a Wonderful Life, Some Like It Hot, Rear Window, Dr. Strangelove, big fan of Dr. Strangelove, Seven Samurai, Rashomon, Third Man, La Strada, more recently Pan's Labyrinth, Birdman, and Grand Budapest Hotel. Mm-hmm. So last year was a good year for me,
right,
too.
It was two
that are all my favorites. Some of my favorite actors are Meryl Streep, Betty Davis, Katharine Hepburn, Humphrey Bogart, Toshiro Mifune, Daniel Day-Lewis, who I think is awesome, mm-hmm. Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin, of course, Christian Bale, another amazing actor, Kate Blanchett, the late Philip Seymour Hoffman, among others.
Well, we are going to be talking a lot, like I said, about the St. Louis International Film Festival today, but we got to get down to business. We still have to talk about the top 10 at the box office and review a few new movies. Top 10 at the box office. Michelle, I haven't seen it. Let me guess. I'm going to guess that America's sweetheart, Sandra Bullock, has knocked off America's second favorite sweetheart, Matt Damon, for that top spot. Am I correct?
No. There was lots of tricks and treats this weekend at the box office. Here is the top 12 domestic weekend box office estimates for November 1st. At number one was Ridley Scott's The Martian. It was number one again for the second week in a row. This is the fourth weekend out of the five since its debut, dropping only 27.5%, adding another $11.4 million to its total. The Martian now stands at $182.8 million domestically, $428 million worldwide. It is also just $4.8 million shy of becoming director Ridley Scott's highest-grossing domestic release of all time.
Wow.
Well, but our brand in crisis was close on its heels, I assume, correct?
It's going to be a ways until I get to that one. Yeah, I know, right? At number two from Sony was Goosebumps. hanging in there with 10.2 million. This is a huge plus for Jack Black and the start of a great franchise for Sony. So its cumulative total now stands at 75.7 million worldwide. At number three is Bridge of Spies with 8.1 million. With another 30% drop, the cumulative total of Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks' Thriller has grown to 45 million. At number four is Hotel Transylvania 2 with 5.8 million. The animated sequel is now 7.7 million ahead of its predecessor's overall cumulative from 2012. And Sony's top grossing domestic release of 2015. At number five is The Weinstein Company's Burnt, Bradley Cooper's movie about a disgraced superstar chef seeking culinary redemption, took in a mere 5 million. So that didn't do so well. Number six is The Last Witch.
The Last Witch Hunter beat Our Brandes Crisis.
Exactly. 4.8 million. Number seven, Paranormal Activity Ghost Dimension, 3.5. Coming in at number eight is Our Brandes Crisis.
Wow.
Sandra Bullock's movie didn't do so well at the box office either. It brought in a measly $3.4 million in more than 2,000 theaters throughout the U.S. The opening gross of Our Brandes Crisis is the lowest opening of 2015.
Why do you think that is? Kate, you saw Our Brandes Crisis. Why do you think it bombed so bad?
Well, I think maybe people who might be confused by the title.
Yeah, title's
they
poor.
Didn't know it was it was a documentary. It's based on real events. Yeah. I think it's being marketed as a comedy, which it's not really.
Right. And yeah, I think adults are waiting for it to get maybe at home.
Right.
They can watch it at home.
And there might be some word of mouth.
Right.
You know, it's kind of election season. But, you know, the funny title, people are not going to necessarily know what it is. And, you know, I think their expectations of a Sandra Bullock film is going to be different than what the film actually was. I didn't think it was a bad film.
Right. And with Burnt and with Our Brandes Crisis, Halloween took place on Saturday. That's traditionally the busiest day of the week for the movie-going audiences. So I think studios in general, we're bracing for this weekend and going, I don't know, you know, but maybe next weekend, who knows?
But this past weekend, we had Goosebumps, we had Hotel Transylvania,
right?
And The Witch Hunter and Paranormal, all these things that would soak up a lot of Halloween going.
And those movies didn't do so well.
No, Crimson Peak didn't do well.
Right. And number nine is Crimson Peak, speaking of, at 3.1 million. Number 10 is Steve Jobs from Universal, dropping a whopping 63.7%. Danny Boyle's film managed only 2.5 million this weekend. At number 11 was The Intern, still in there, from Warner Brothers. That's at 2.4 million. And coming in at number 12 was the last of the new releases from Paramount Pictures, Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. Mm. That one was the one where Paramount's experimenting with the limited release and more on demand. And I think some of the theater owners, from what I had read on Box Office Mojo, that this flexible release window, some of them said, yeah, no thanks. We're not going to show your film at all.
But Melissa Holland reviewed it for WeAreMovieGeeks.com, and she kind of liked it.
She really liked it. A few other things to note. Opening this week in the U.S. is James Bond Spectre. However, the movie opened up in the U.K. and a bunch of foreign markets, and it took in, so far to date, the film has taken in $80.4 million, which is huge. Right. That's the biggest box office opening in the United Kingdom. This record opening weekend, it also bested Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. It has set the highest 7-day gross in the UK box office history, overtaking the last James Bond film, Skyfall. Spectre, the 24th James Bond adventure, continues the longest-running and most successful film franchise in cinema history. It'll be interesting to see what it does this coming weekend when it opens in the U.S.
I bet it's number one.
Oh, yeah. Well, either that or the Peanuts movie. A few other things. Truth, the Cate Blanchett movie starring co-starring Robert Redford about Dan Rather and the CBS News debacle. That's also didn't do well in limited release. It took in $1.2 million. And opening in other markets is A24's Room, which Tom reviewed. That opened up in 49 theaters. That took in $269,000. Suffragette also added 19 theaters, and that brought in $155,000.
So Room's not doing very
well. Both of those movies need, Suffragette and Room both need to be in the award season mix. Really are going to need some.
Well, who wants to see a movie about a kid trapped in a room with his mom who's being repeatedly raped?
Yeah,
it's a tough sell.
But the acting,
acting's really good.
Yeah.
And the second half or more of the film is about their recovery afterwards.
Yeah, I gave it 3 of 5 stars. I didn't really care for it that much. It was good. I mean, it was a good film. It just could have been a lot better. All right, let's review some other movies. I am out of the loop, dudes. When I was here last Monday, I had just seen 8 films at the theater, and I'm sitting here now, and I only saw 1 movie at the theater in the past week. A lot of it has to do with these interviews I've done for St. Louis International Film Festival. The only movie I saw this week was Free Hell. Did you see Free Hell?
No, actually, I missed that
one. No, I missed that one, too.
Well, I went to the Tivoli Friday night to see this German movie called Victoria, which is all shot in 1 2.5-hour continuous take, and it's gotten really good reviews, but I started getting a little queasy because I'm a wussy and I have a sensitive tummy and I'm a big baby. And so I actually had to leave after 15 minutes and Free Held, which I had no intention of seeing, was starting at the other screen and I didn't feel like jumping in my car and driving to a different theater. So I saw Free Held. It wasn't too bad. Jim was kind of writing his review. It's sort of heavy-handed and has a lot of speeches and platitudes, but it's a nice emotional story. Certainly not any worse than the movie that Julianne Moore won the Oscar for last year, which was called Still Alice?
Yes, Still Alice.
All right. But Kate saw a couple of movies. You did see Our Brand is Crisis, which we said didn't do very well. It came in at number 8 on its opening weekend, and it opened pretty wide.
She is the brightest and most innovative.
The best campaign strategist in the game.
Responsible for the greatest political upset in history.
The presidential campaign in South America.
Fragile democracy.
Economy in real trouble. Our candidate is considered arrogant and out of touch with people's lives.
How far are you behind?
28 points.
What were your thoughts on Brandon's Crisis? You said it was actually okay.
Well, I thought it was too, but I think the biggest problem was the title and expectations about what a Sandra Bullock film would be. But she did a nice job, and it's a fictional version of a documentary made about this team of American campaign managers that go to Bolivia, South American country, to run a presidential campaign. And I think, you know, if you're a kind of political junkie, that's an interesting concept. So how are these people going to do? And they go there, and it's all about the marketing campaign, and they don't even listen to this guy. It was like listening to a criminal trial in which they don't even ask if he's guilty or innocent, because it didn't matter. All mattered was how they presented him to their voters. So, you know, I found this an intriguing, kind of chilling thing, and she has this great sort of crazy character and has this relationship with Billy Bob Thornton, who's her political opponent, longstanding political opponent. So there's this great verbal dance between the two of them. But I don't think any of this comes through in the way the film's being marketing or the trailer, and that title is just going to puzzle people. So it might get some word of mouth. It's not a bad film, and the performances are really good, and that's an interesting concept because it's based on something real.
I don't see it
real.
Rising at the box office.
Well, it's going to have a limited appeal.
And I think it's one of those where people will definitely catch it. Oh, hey, it's on HBO. Hey, it's on video on demand. It's in the red box. Now let's check it out.
So did you review it for our site?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think that was Jim reviewed that. I reviewed Truth and Burnt.
Okay.
Right. And I'd love to talk about Burnt.
But
Well, we reviewed Truth last week. So go ahead and talk about Burnt. How many stars did you give Burnt?
What do you want?
I'm going to run the best restaurant in the world.
If you're a chef, he's like the Rolling Stones.
I don't want my restaurant to be a place where you come and eat. I want people to sit at that table and be sick with longing.
I think I gave it 2. And the reason is I'm coming at Burnt with a little bit of expertise that maybe some people don't have. My husband was a chef for years and years.
Right?
And he trained and worked at a country club.
Country club did he work
at? Bellevue Country Club. Right. And, you know, had his own restaurant. And he's been in the restaurant business forever. Plus, my sister and her husband were in the restaurant business. So I kind of know the inside of how this works.
Is he still in the restaurant business?
No, he's out of it, and they're out of it, too.
Okay. It'd be a tough business, I would think.
It is a very tough business, and,
a lot
you know,
of hours.
But the idea of being a chef is very popular on TV right now, and you have all these reality shows, and some of them are pretty far removed from the reality of it. And I thought Burnt was kind of more the reality show version of how a restaurant runs and how a chef works versus the real thing. And if you want to get a real idea of it, and it doesn't matter if you're talking about Michelin stars or a food truck. If you go to Chef, that film that came out in the summer. Much more real version of how kitchens really work, because it has to work like a film shoot. Yet the chef is the director, and he runs the show. And yeah, there are barking orders, but if everybody's throwing fits, nothing gets done. You got food you got to get out to your customers, or your restaurant closes. You know, and it doesn't matter if you're waiting for a reviewer or something like that. Burnt has Bradley Cooper doing these meltdowns and having backstabbed everybody. And it looked a lot more like Gordon Ramsay's TV shows. And sure enough, he helped train.
I was going to say.
So it's a lot more of that. On the other hand, you know, you got lots of pretty pictures of the food. It gets a lot of little details right about how they handle their knives and how they do presentation. But, you know, getting all those little details right doesn't matter if you don't get the big picture right. So if you love reality show TV about cooking, like if you love Gordon Ramsay, this is the thing for you. But if you really want to know something about how a top-notch chef works and top-notch kitchens work, you're not going to get burnt.
So Kate gave a 2 out of 5. So that's kind of a negative review. Yeah. So Kate felt burnt by burnt. She recommends going to see Chef instead. How about a quick review of Miss You Already?
Hi.
Hey.
What are you up to at lunchtime?
Is everything okay?
You found out a week ago?
Well, how could the tumor have gotten so big?
Because it's aggressive, like you.
Oh, Jesus.
There's a place.
Which opens this Friday. You saw that as well. You're the only one in the room that has seen it. That stars Drew Barrymore. What's that about?
Drew Barrymore and Toni Collette. And they play these two longtime friends.
The trailer just...
From back in college. And they have this feisty friendship with each other. And when they part ways, they say, "Miss you already." And it's a very realistic girlfriend sort of thing.
Right.
You know, they're very different people. Toni Collette's character's a little older. She's a lot more outgoing. But their friendship is completely believable. And then the two of them go through these different kind of life crises in which, I don't mean to be too much of a spoiler, in which Toni Collette has a...
We're all about spoilers here.
Has a health crisis, cancer diagnosis. And at the same time, her friend who's been trying and trying and trying to get pregnant gets pregnant. So the two of them cope with this, but I found it both charming and believable. And this is the kind of story where you can do smarmy, you know, Lifetime movie sort of stuff, and it avoids that. It's much more comic. These guys smart off to each other.
Do you like it?
They're just, it's really funny and really charming.
How many stars do you think you will be giving?
You know, I think I'd give it 4 stars.
Right. Yeah, Catherine Hardwicke directed it, and it's been playing really well at some of the festivals, and they said it's very smart and really well written, and
it is.
You know, the two of them give great performances, and so.
And for a film about this subject, it's actually kind of fun, you know, even though, you know, sad things happen.
Without it becoming a Lifetime.
It's very real and very touching, and, you know, their characters are so likable, and their friendships so
all right. Charming. Well, Kate recommends Miss You Already, which opens Friday. A couple of movies open this Friday. I am so excited about Spectre. We are seeing that tonight.
Amen.
Tell me where he is.
He's everywhere.
You should go there. You're crossing over to a place where there is no mercy.
That is, of course, the fourth 007 movie to star Daniel Craig. Monica Bellucci is one of the female co-stars. What's your favorite 007 movie there, Kate?
Oh, I don't know. I think I'm the wrong person to ask about that. I think Daniel Craig's done a lot to revive the franchise.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I were going to pick a favorite, I'd probably go back to Sean Connery and something like Dr.
No. What's your favorite, Michelle? Oh, Dr. No is your favorite?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite's Sean Connery, but I love Roger Moore, and I love For Your Eyes Only. I love Moonraker. I'd have to say one of those.
Okay. All right. And the other movie that opens this Friday is Peanuts.
Okay, Snoopy, let's do this. Are you serious?
Of course, based on Charlie Brown and Charles Schultz. And they had a screening of that yesterday. Nobody in this room went, but our friend Dane Marty went. And Dane will be reviewing it for WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I talked to Dane last night and asked him to send me a 2-sentence review for me to read on our podcast today. So here's what Dane wrote. Peanuts could have gone overboard by adding elements that Charles Schulz and Peanuts devotees would have been shocked by, but it didn't. It's entertaining for grade school kids, of course, but I heard adults laughing as well. The plot cleverly utilizes many old stories from the comic strip's past, but brings a fresh perspective to the famous and legendary story. As for the animation, while I view the movie in 3D, and there is a subtle element of CG to the characters, background, and action, it never strays too far from the original animated TV movies. It presents a well-fused balance between old and new styles. Basically, this is a quality animated film for all ages, which doesn't destroy our memories of the classic cartoon. So, you can read Dane's more detailed review Thursday night at WeAreMovieGeeks.com, but I get the impression that they're sort of respectful to the source material and are making Peanuts not too wild and crazy. And
Variety's review just came out today, and they loved it. They pretty much almost said the same thing that Dane's going to have in his review.
Okay, good.
So, and on a personal note, one of the writers is from my hometown of Newington, Connecticut. So, back in Connecticut, our newspaper, the Hartford Courant, had a nice write up on the writer, and so I love that it was a local tie.
So, do you know this guy?
Actually, my stepmother does.
Oh, yeah.
My stepmother went to school with his parents.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, oh, that's cool. So it'll be interesting. I cannot wait to see the box office numbers for next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, is it going to be Peanuts? Is it going to be Spectre?
It's not going to be Peanuts. It's going to be Spectre. It's just a matter of how much more. I'm not sure if, you know, young kids are excited about Peanuts.
But look what Goosebumps did.
Well, that's
true.
But still, right.
The books are wildly popular.
Oh, aren't they? Yeah. I know, with my son's generation and that. Yeah.
And Peanuts is not with that younger generation. I mean, Peanuts will do fine. It looks cute.
So, yeah, I can't wait. After this $80 million opening weekend overseas, Spectre's going to
I got a feeling Spectre's going to rock. It's going to be insane. All right, now we are done reviewing and talking about new movies. What we need to talk about now is the St. Louis International Film Festival. What's this, the 24th annual, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's amazing. You guys are involved in Women in Film Awards, and why don't you guys talk about that for a while?
Kate and I are part of the Alliance of Women Film Journalists group. It's an association of professional female movie critics, reporters, and feature writers working in print, broadcast, and online media. We're dedicated to supporting work by and about women, both in front and behind the cameras, through promotional activities and outreach programs. And our group presents an annual EDA Award in recognition of outstanding accomplishments by and about women in the movies. And these are selected at film festivals throughout the year and throughout the world as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, once again, we are presenting, the AFJ is presenting the EDA Awards for Best Female Directed Films and Best Female Directed Documentaries at SLIF. We are going to be presenting at the final night of the 24th Annual Whitaker St. Louis International Film Festival, which is held November 5th through the 15th. So we have two categories, narrative and documentary, that we present in.
Okay. And so many movies you guys have to watch?
We had to watch 10, five in each category. Mm-hmm. And so the panel, we had two separate panels, and the panels were made up of Kate and myself, Marina Atunes from Quiet Earth, Lori Coker from True View Reviews.
Are these local sites? Or?
No, these are sites throughout the United States.
Oh, okay.
So that way they get a wide range, because this is an international group of women making up the AWFJ. We have myself, we have Diane Sanger from Review Express, we have Betsy Pickle, Rebecca Paul from Film Journal International. So in 2012, we presented Ursula Meyer's Sister with the Best Female Directed Narrative Feature, while Debbie Lynn's Seeking Asian Female took the EDA for the Best Female Directed Documentary. So this year, we've SLIP presented us with 10 films, like I said, five in each category to decide to watch and then decide who we would award, which we will do on Sunday, the final night.
Tell me about some of the films that you saw.
Kate, I'm going to hand
you watched all 10 so far?
Yes, yeah. We have done all 10.
Okay. Have you watched all 10, Kate?
You know, I just watched the ones that were in my panel. You were on the documentary
correct
panel, and I was on the narrative. And the reason why I did that was I was also reviewing films for the Jewish Light, so I had to kind of... But I am going to watch them all. But since I wasn't voting for the documentaries, I didn't watch them.
Yeah, SLIF keeps us busy, doesn't it?
They do. And they're all online links, so that makes it more interesting.
Oh, no. Because I got to watch them on my computer.
So I can talk a little bit about some of the narrative films, since that's the panel I was on. Fidelio, Alice's Journey, is about this woman engineer on a ship. She goes to sea. She leaves her Danish boyfriend at home. And it's sort of a reversal of the roles you expect about a sailor going to sea, in which, you know, she's a lot more adventurous and than her boyfriend. And she, you know, what happens at sea stays at sea, sort of. And she encounters the fellow who's the captain, is somebody she knows before. But it has beautiful photography, and the acting is extremely strong.
I thought so, too.
You know, it's the sort of thing where you can describe the plot, and it doesn't sound like anything. But these actors get so much out of it, and the photography of the sea. You would think they're working like an industrial tramp ship, and you would think this would be ugly. But the photography is beautiful. The machines look beautiful. The ocean looks beautiful. And, of course, the actress herself is very pretty. But, you know, it's very sort of lyrical. And I found it a very haunting sort of film. Another film that was in this was one called Margarita with a Straw, which is kind of a coming-of-age sort of comedy about an Indian young woman with cerebral palsy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
who's nothing like you would expect her to be.
Right.
I mean, she's a little defiant. She's kind of flirtatious. She has a couple of guys that are also guys with issues that have. Mm-hmm. And she gets a chance to go to college in New York, where her whole life really opens up.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time, though, she's a very sweet person. She's very likable. You can see how people are attracted to her personally, despite her cerebral palsy. I just thought that's the sort of thing where, once again, it could be a Lifetime sort of movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't go into that obvious sort of thing, and it isn't overly sentimental. It's kind of, you know, funny and playful. Silver Skies, that's a comedy about a bunch of retirees in California.
With George Hamilton, I believe.
Yeah. And it's they're all kind of sort of one foot in Hollywood, but their participation in Hollywood is sort of like, we worked the gate at Paramount, or I was an extra in movies,
yes.
You know, this sort of thing. And it's kind of playful and
Valerie
cute.
Perrine,
yeah,
Barbara
yes.
Bain,
yes.
Alex Rocco, he just passed away. Mariette Hartley.
Oh yeah,
Howard Heisman. What a great cast!
Yeah,
many
great
familiar
cast of people you haven't seen in a couple of days.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
And they all look like they're having great fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a very cute and playful sort of thing.
And I'll be reviewing the director of that film, Rosemary Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So look for my review, my interview with her later this week.
Two more in the narrative one. We're also very striking films. Another one with really gorgeous photography was Sworn Virgin, which is a very good, very powerful drama about these two women that were raised as sisters. They're actually cousins after one girl's parents were killed. They live in this remote part of Albania where there's this longstanding custom going back centuries that if a woman feels too restricted by the rules, and the women are very restricted,
yes.
They don't go out of the house, they don't carry guns, they hardly speak, they belong to their husband.
Mm-hmm.
But if a woman feels that it's too restrictive, she can live her life as a man. She just has to swear to remain a virgin. And this is something that's existed for centuries. It's not something made up. This is something real. Mm-hmm. And it's just really an intriguing sort of thing.
It was a very interesting film to watch.
And once again, really good acting. Mm-hmm. The sisters, I thought, were really good. You know, the way they interacted with each other, that they have very different personalities. You know, strikingly, the woman who chooses to be a sworn virgin is in many ways a much more conventional and passive person than her sister. So it was really, really interesting film. And another one I thought was kind of magical and puzzling was one called The Wonders, which is about this family in this remote town in Italy in the Tuscan countryside. And there's all this magical references to the mystery of the Tuscan culture, which is mostly known through its tombs. This family is under threat. They're traditional farmers, and they feel like they're being pushed off their land, and they're beekeepers for the most part. But there are all these little hints in there that suggest whether these people are real or not, which is kind of ties in with the Tuscan thing. So it's kind of
magical
sort of film. And, you know, also very nice acting.
I hope more people see it.
Yes.
Monica Bellucci is in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in Bond. She's the new Bond girl. You know, she's the oldest James Bond girl.
Really?
But she's still younger than Daniel. She's still older than Daniel Craig. No, but not much.
So you liked
Wonders, it sounds like.
I liked all of these films to some degree. I mean, some a little more, but that was a very strong field this year. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all very worthy films.
I'll talk just really briefly about the documentaries. We had some strong documentaries. We had Finding Bosnia, which was the filmmakers, you know, it was her personal journey to Bosnia to meet with the family and to make sure, you know, she keeps her heritage intact while living in the United States. We had another movie called Frame by Frame. It was about when the Taliban ruled Afghanistan. It's a very a human type film, and it's a lot about the pursuit of truth. We also had another movie from the U.S. In the Game. This one I particularly really liked. It's not a sports movie, but it's about a women's soccer team in Chicago inner city. Another film that we had from the U.S. was Love Between the Covers, and it's about romance novels. But it's a lucrative industry. Yes, this was a documentary.
About time somebody made a documentary about romance novels.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the money that these women make and the followers, it's a really interesting look into this.
What's the name of that one again?
This is called Love Between the Covers.
I'm going to watch that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting movie. Definitely check it out. And then we had one of the most powerful documentaries we watched was from Australia called Once My Mother. It's a filmmaker who was abandoned by her mother in an orphanage in Poland. They're reuniting. And it's about forgiveness and understanding. So that was a really powerful movie, and I hope people definitely see that one. So these are the 10 films that we're judging, and we have two panels for, and that we'll be handing out awards for.
Are you guys the only two local women on this?
There's a few. There's I think one or two other women that's part of the AWFJ. Right. But most of them are either international, you know, England, Canada.
Yeah. Mm. I think we're the only two St. Louis critics on the panel this year.
Yes, we are.
But that's not been true in the past.
Right. Correct. So, yeah, we're the only two local. And then, but everybody was judging. We were the only two local
this
also.
Year, yes.
Right.
But what about Love the Coopers? Well, wasn't that directed by a woman? I believe it was. And that's playing at the same
And that's a film that has a lot of familiar names and familiar faces.
A lot of familiar names that I should know better. I can't wait. We'll probably tear into that. I mean, review that movie next Monday.
But Kate and I were discussing, you know, over the past few weeks and over the past few months that we noticed that this year was just another, it seemed like it was another strong year for women in film, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year, it started off, 2014 began, we had Angelina Jolie, well, as she is now, Angelina Jolie's Pitts, Unbroken. Mm-hmm. And we also had Ava DuVernay's Selma. And it's just kind of carried over. It's just washed over, I think, into this year as well. And, you know, Ava DuVernay, she just turned down Marvel's Black Panther movie.
Really?
And Angelina Jolie Pitt, it's looking like she might do the Captain Marvel movie.
Really?
So that's kind of in the works.
Is it actress or director?
A director. This year's just been a really strong, you know, it's been both front of and behind the camera. It's still kind of, ever since Kathryn Bigelow won Best Director for Hurt Locker, you know, all those years ago, we still haven't had anybody in between there win or, you know, be nominated. So, but
well,
otherwise.
Very few women were nominated before that.
But otherwise, we've had you know, this year at the Oscars, the Best Picture group could be almost all about women, you know, with Room, with Mad Max, with Carol, with Joy, the movie coming out in December, Brooklyn, and Suffragette.
Yeah, don't you guys want to talk about Suffragette now?
Women should not exercise judgment in political affairs.
If we allow women to vote, it will mean the loss of social structure.
Yeah,
and that was directed by a woman. And
I didn't.
It's directed, produced, written
by a woman.
Stars women.
Yes.
How's Meryl Streep in that film?
She shows up for. She has a quick cameo.
Really?
But it's strong, you know.
She's all over the marketing.
Right, right. And I mean, if you're thinking you're seeing Meryl Streep throughout the whole movie, you're not. But the part when she shows up and the part she plays, it leaves an indelible mark.
Yeah, very pivotal role.
Think she'll get a supporting nod?
No, I just can't see.
It's too brief, and there's so many other good supporting roles.
Definitely.
Maybe another year. You know, I think women are kind of, before the camera and behind the camera, mm-hmm. kind of having a moment right now, and I think there is a kind of rising tide.
Right.
You know, with Jennifer Lawrence's comments about mm-hmm. how women are not respected and compensated.
Exactly. But,
and I think a lot of women are getting bolder in film. Audiences are getting more willing to embrace films mm-hmm. that are centered on women. And if you look at Selma, you know, it's not a woman's picture. You know, it's
right.
a historic picture. It doesn't matter that it's a woman director in mm-hmm. a way, mm-hmm. you know, although she brings her own sensibility to it. But it's like women are being let out of the cage of only making certain kinds of films and making a greater variety of films. And
right.
people were very eager to see Emily Blunt in Sicario, mm-hmm. you know, an action film.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly the role you might expect her to play, but it's, right. you know, it's the sort of thing where people were willing to go there. And I think a lot of that is...
Right.
It's a trend. It's not just this year.
Yeah. And especially with women directors and below the line crews now, they're not directing women movies. Like you have Patricia Riggin directing The 33. Elizabeth Banks, look what she has done with the Pitch Perfect franchise.
Amazing.
You know, now granted, it's, you know, and those are fun movies and everything.
Right.
But she has made a ton for Universal. And they've just announced she's going to be directing Pitch Perfect 3 again. And these women starring movies have done phenomenal this year. Spy with Melissa McCarthy did really mm-hmm, well. Mm-hmm. Amy Schumer's Trainwreck did just right. incredibly well. Ex Machina, that did really well. Mad Max did really well. So you're definitely right with women just, yeah, in front of the camera, behind the camera, and what it's doing to actually change the industry. But, you know, they came out with women, as far as directing, though, it's still just a small percentage mm-hmm. who are crossing that line. Women directed 7% of Hollywood's top 250 films last year, while men were in charge of 85% of all U.S. movies, according to a new research that came out. It was either like on The Telegraph or BBC had announced that. So that's where that whole thing with Jennifer Lawrence and Ava DuVernay and Meryl Streep came out and said, yeah, this is kind of has to change.
Well, that's true. But I think if you go back 5 years and look at the number of films directed by women, it's building. You know,
right.
there have to be
right.
groundbreakers. There have to be women willing to push in. But yeah, it's a moment for women in film.
So women directors, women in film, women in film awards. Are you going to announce what you're going to give the award to, or I guess you can't do that before the awards?
No, we will announce the night of.
Okay.
We will be announcing the night of.
That'll be Sunday the 15th. That's almost 2 weeks away. So maybe on the 16th when we're here, you can talk what won that.
Mm-hmm.
So the St. Louis International Film Festival starts this Thursday, November 5th, and the kickoff film is called Deep Web. Deep Web is directed by Alex Winter. Alex Winter, most people probably know best as Bill... Or Ted. Who did he play? Was he Bill or Ted? Whichever one Keanu Reeves wasn't. That's who Alex was in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and its sequel. Alex is actually quite an accomplished filmmaker. He made a great movie in the early 90s called Freaked. And that's actually the movie that mm-hmm. the St. Louis International Film Festival was going to show, but they actually had some legal problems. I pitched the idea of a Todd Browning tribute, which I will be hosting on Friday the 13th of November, and we will be showing Todd Browning's Freaks.
Gooba gobble, gooba gobble.
We accept her, we accept her.
Gooba gobble, gooba gobble.
One of us, one of us.
Gooba gobble.
As well as Todd Browning's The Unknown, which is a silent film with Lon Chaney. Cliff Fralick thought it would be kind of cool to have Freaked show and then follow up that with Freaks. Alex Winter made this movie called Freaked, which is sort of a comedy riff on Freaks. I interviewed Alex Winter the other day, and this is kind of a fun story. Alex Winter lived in St. Louis. He spent his childhood in St. Louis. He lived here from about the age of 4 till about the age of 14. And I asked him about Freaks, and he said that was the film that made him want to be a filmmaker. The first time I saw Freaks was when I was about 12, and it was on the campus of Washington University, and it was a 16-millimeter print. It was a double feature with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with Frederick March. That would have been in about 1974. And I was talking to Alex, and Alex was saying, oh, you know, my mom taught at Washington University, and she used to take me to all the movies that screened on the campus of Washington University. So the first time I saw Freaks, I was about 9, and it was on the campus of University in a 16-millimeter print double feature with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So Alex Winter and I saw Freaks for the first time at the exact same screening over 40 years ago. Alex is an interesting guy, though. He's worked with Charles Bronson and Vincent Price, my two favorite actors. He got blown away in Death Wish 3, and he worked with Vincent Price on stage at the Muni in Oliver in 1976, so that was kind of cool. We talk about that in the interview. But his movie Deep Red is a very interesting documentary.
It's called The Silk Road. Silk Road. A $1 billion online marketplace for illegal drugs.
It's like eBay for drugs.
The elusive ringleader known as
the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Who is the Dread Pirate Roberts? Authorities say they have their guy.
29-year-old Ross Albright.
Is he the man they call DPR?
It's about the sort of illegal dark side of the web where you have to, even to get there, you have to buy this crazy encryption software that bounces off servers all over the world so nothing can be traced. And it sort of focuses on this one website called Silk Road. Silk Road is the eBay of drugs. You can buy anything on Silk Road, apparently. You can buy cocaine and heroin and pot and whatever you want to buy to get you high. And these sellers were using the Postal Service, the U.S. Postal Service, to mail all these packages, which made some postal inspectors sort of take note. They turned them over to the FBI. The FBI got involved, and the FBI was sort of able to figure out who this guy was, this guy named Joss Unland, I believe was his name. They figured out he was the mastermind behind this Silk Road site, and he went to trial and received a very, very long prison sentence. But Alex Winter made this documentary while the trial was going on, which is kind of an unusual approach for a documentary, and usually I think people kind of like to wait till the dust settles and see where things fall. But he did this as the trial was going on. He followed Joss Unland's parents back and forth to the trial, which was kind of sad. Very interesting, very eye-opening look at the internet. So that'll be this Thursday night. That'll be screening at the Tivoli, is opening night of the St. Louis International Film Festival. Alex Winter will be there, and he will do a Q&A before and after the movie. There's also a reception, I believe, from 6 to 7:30. And then Friday night, there will be a screening of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Put them in the Iron Maiden.
Excellent!
Execute them!
Bogus!
Alex will be there as well. So that's going to be a lot of fun. There's a couple other things I'm really looking forward to at the St. Louis International Film Festival. There's a documentary about Korla Pandit that looks really interesting. Korla Pandit was a musician who hung out with Ed Wood and Vampira and all those gang of weirdos. In fact, in the Ed Wood movie that Tim Burton made in 1994, Korla Pandit, played himself. And this is a little off subject, but I will be hosting a screening of Ed Wood this Thursday night at Schlafly Bottleworks at 7:30.
He made movies like no one else.
You want to keep moving? You've got to get through that door. That was perfect.
Perfect. Do you know anything about film production?
Well, I like to think so.
He had an eye for talent.
I met Bela Lugosi.
Well, I thought he was dead.
This is the most uncomfortable coffin I've ever been in.
No, he's very much alive.
That is a fundraiser for Helping Kids Together, which is a fine charity that sends kids with health issues on trips. So that's Ed Wood this Thursday night at 7:30. Besides the Women in Film Awards, Kate, what other movies are you looking forward to at the St. Louis International Film Festival?
Well, I just got done watching a bunch of films for the Jewish Light, the films with Jewish themes and Israeli films, and there's a really good selection for this year's festival. Films that would appeal to anybody, although a number of them also have to do with the Holocaust. Something that's got a lot of festival buzz is Son of Saul.
Yeah, yes. Didn't it win some awards at Cannes or something?
Oh, yeah. It took the Grand Prix that was very... It got edged out for the top award, but yes. It's got other awards, and it's going to be released probably in December. They haven't set a date yet for St.
Awards,
Louis.
Yeah, it's definitely an award season play. It's probably the front runner for the category.
And since we're not sure when it's coming back to St. Louis, it might be something you want to see on a big screen.
Correct.
It has very unusual acting. It's done in mostly close-up, and it's a very different approach to a kind of Holocaust film.
Where did you see it? Did you see the screener?
No. Yeah, no, I just read about it and saw the trailer. I haven't actually
seen
it, but you know, I've just done a little research on it, and no, it's not going to be available to see until even to critics until the festival.
And anybody getting, if you're thinking about any of the big films being shown at the festival, you might want to hurry up and get your tickets, because some of them are already sold out.
Sure. Yeah. Son of Saul is this Sunday, November 8th at 6:15, and that'll be at Webster Hughes Moore Auditorium, with it, which I think seats about 250.
Right.
Yeah. That might even be sold out. It seems like this Sunday is a big movie day for the Jewish interest films. There's also Flory's Flame, which is a documentary about a Bosnian woman. She's actually a descendant of Spanish Sephardic Jews, and her family kept the music of their homeland in Spain through the centuries and have been passing it down. And she's a singer and musician. She is the only member of her family to survive the Holocaust, so she is the keeper of the flame for this music. She's the only one who knows this still. And they do a concert. She's a very outgoing, very upbeat sort of person, so it's a wonderful documentary.
What's this called again?
It's Flory's Flame.
Flory's Flame.
Yeah. Her name is Flory Jagoda, and she's 90 years old, and she was recently honored, I think, in New York for her work in music. Okay. She's very talented.
Yeah, that's Sunday at 5 p.m. at the KDX stage. KDHX stage, I should say.
Right.
So you're going to have to race over there when that's over. That's only 58 minutes long, so you could actually leave there, race over to Webster U to see Son of Saul if you were so inclined.
And another one on the same Sunday, this is at 7 o'clock, so you might have to make some choices, is called Last Mensch, about this German-Jewish man who escaped from Auschwitz and lived in Germany. This is a fictional film, a drama. Uh-huh. Lived under an assumed name, a German name. And then after the war, he continued to live that, just kind of, you know, shed his Jewish identity. And now as he's, you know, reaching the end of life, he wants to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Nobody will believe he's Jewish. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he goes on this road trip, you know, to try to find some proof, going back to his parents' home village, you know, to prove this. So it's sort of a little comic, and it's about exploring identity. He goes on his own personal journey to reclaim his Jewish identity. So very nice acting in this one. Another one that's on the 8th is a documentary called What Our Fathers Did, A Nazi Legacy, about these two men who were the sons of high Nazi officials in Germany and their friends, but they have very different ideas about attitudes about what their fathers did. Mm-hmm. One of them, what his father did in the war, it was so repulsive that he can't think of anything else when he thinks of him. The other one is able to just kind of put it aside and say, well, he's a wonderful father and I still love him. And the two of them interact with this younger man, another friend of theirs, who's a human rights lawyer, who's the grandson of a Jewish man who escaped the very town these two men lived in. Mm. So he escaped their mass killings, and they have this intelligent conversation in which they explore, you know, what the sins of the fathers mean, how the descendants of Nazis have to grapple with this, how you should deal with it, and very interesting, intellectual but intriguing sort of conversation. There's a couple of really good fiction films from Israel. One of them is called The Kindergarten Teacher, in which this teacher becomes obsessed with this one child that has some poetic ability, and it kind of goes into the nature of obsession, the nature of literature, and it's very beautifully shot and very beautifully acted. It's won a lot of awards. So that's something one might want to check out. And then there is a very kind of hard-to-watch movie called Life According to Ohad, which is about a radical animal rights activist in Israel who does, you know, just, he is so committed to his cause that he just goes beyond what you would expect. And it's about how this affects his relationship with his parents, you know, that they can't quite grasp what he's doing. But he's about, he goes and, you know, frees chickens from facilities and, so.
That's Sunday the 15th at 1:30 at the High Point Backlot. The High Point Backlot's a nice theater. I enjoy seeing screenings there, but boy, I don't know if it's a good choice for a venue for the Seatless International Film Festival.
Very small.
Seats 44. Yeah,
right.
Plus a couch. So I maybe can squeeze six or eight people on that couch. I don't know why you'd want to.
And another Jewish interest film that people might be interested in is called Remember. It's about an aging survivor of Auschwitz who's losing his memory, and he has a friend who's in a wheelchair, and the two of them are able, or well, the fellow in the wheelchair is able to identify the guard who killed their families in the concentration camp, and they decide that the man losing his memory needs to track this guy down and kill him. But he needs the help of his friend because he can't remember what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So Christopher Plummer plays the friend who goes out on the road, and he's getting a lot of accolades for his performance in the
And Martin Landau is in it as well.
What's
Martin
called Landau? Again?
It's called Remember. Remember. Yeah. Martin Landau is the fellow in the wheelchair. Christopher Plummer is the guy who's out on the road and is directed by
Adam O'Goyan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my. Okay.
It'll be good to see Martin Landau. I don't think he's had a really good role since he won the Oscar for playing Bela Lugosi in Ed Wood, which by the way is screening Thursday night at Schlafly Bottleworks. So that'll be a good one too. I'm looking forward to that one. That is Friday, November 13th at 7 p.m. Wait a minute. That's the same time as the Todd Browning tribute.
Oh,
I do not recommend seeing Remember at the St. Louis International Film Festival. Doggone it. You know, they're not showing as much retro cinema as they usually do. In fact, this thing I'm hosting is with The Unknown, which is, I think that's the only silent film they're showing this year. Usually they show two or three silent films.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're doing Freak, so that's old. We're doing Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And I think, what else is there? There's a Hitchcock.
There's a Hitchcock Truffaut documentary based on the book. And then they're going to show Notorious. It's always worth seeing those on the big screen.
That's at Webster Hughes Moore Auditorium, too.
Yeah, but you're right. Not as many retrospectives. This year.
Another movie that I'm sort of want to pitch here is called Band of Robbers. I interviewed the directors. It's a pair of brothers, Adam and Aaron Nee. Look for my interview with them. I'll be posting that probably Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. And what these guys did was they took Mark Twain's Adventures of Tom Sawyer and the Adventures of Huck Finn, and they updated it. So you've got these characters named Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn and Becky Thatcher and Injun Joe. Injun Joe is played by Stephen Lang, and he's the villain of the piece. He's quite good. Mm-hmm. And they rob this pawn shop. And there's this treasure map, and it really does follow some of the Mark Twain stories pretty closely. But it's a kind of a comedy, sort of a violent comedy. It's pretty good. These guys, the Nee brothers, are talented, and they've made several films. And they will be in town for the screening of that, which is this weekend as well. What else?
Well, I think every year with the Film Festival, you need to make an effort to see some of the shorts programs, because you don't see those any other time. This is your only chance to see Oscar-nominated shorts, and some of these are just wonderful little gems.
So. And if they're shown here, SLIF is one of the film festivals that if you're shown and you're awarded, you're in Oscar consideration, which is
The fest also showcases a lot of locally made films, too.
Right.
Oh, yes.
A lot. And there's a lot of good local talent. There's a documentary called Safe Side of the Fence that won the best documentary at the St. Louis Filmmaker Showcase. That's about all the nuclear waste that they've dumped all around Missouri and in the St. Louis area. That's made by a guy named Tony West. Look for my interview with him to be posted this week. There's a drama called Four-Way Stop, directed by a young Webster U graduate named Effie Da Silva, that won the best narrative at the St. Louis Filmmaker Showcase. They're showing that. Brian Young's Sleep With Me is a drama with Raymond Barry and some fine actors. That'll be playing as well. And a lot of the shorts are made by local filmmakers.
Yeah, I think since the Cinema St. Louis started doing the St. Louis Filmmaker Showcase, it's really kind of raised the quality of films that are made
here. Yeah, the bar has gone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has really elevated.
Well, we'll be back next week to talk more about the St. Louis International Film Festival. Jim will be back, and I guess we'll also be reviewing Spectre next week. Thanks a lot, Kate, for joining us this morning and filling in for Jim.
Thanks, Tom.
And Michelle, we'll all be back. We'll be back with Jim next week. There's plenty more to talk about this film festival.
Mm-hmm.
We got to sign off for now, though, because we're out of time. Doggone it! I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Kate Marquis.
Listen to us again at We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast, next week.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather.
Oh, nice, Dave. Hello, Don. Hey.
Black leather,
come on,
rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather, rock. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward in the battle, there, chaps.
Crash, crash, crash. Black leather, smash, smash, smash.